Into the Bad Quaker Podcast, where liberty is our mission. Today is Friday, May 10th, 2013. This is podcast 312, and my name is Ben Stone. Some quick announcements before we get to today's guest, by the way. Stick with me through the announcements. Today's guest is going to be Stephanie Murphy, and she is the doctor behind the FR33 aid, and also Pork Therapy Podcast, if you've heard that. And I'm going to have her on in as soon as I'm done with the announcements. Okay, but before we get to that, I want to again be sure and remind you that Pork Fest 10 is coming up June 17th through 23rd, 2013, at the Rogers Campground in Lancaster, New Hampshire. I'll be speaking there, but a lot of more important people than me will be there speaking, and it's going to be a lot of fun. And if you can at all make it, in my opinion, Pork Fest is the Liberty event of the year, every year. So if you can make it at all, you know, if you can at all make it, be sure and get there. Also, the first annual Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest, hosted by the Michigan Peace and Liberty Coalition, is going to be taking place at Brighton Recreation Area, Brighton, Michigan. And it's just going to be a very informal, fun, three-day weekend, family fun, camping, eating hot dogs, telling stories, that kind of thing. If you can make it, be sure and do so. Again, I want to thank the donors who are helping out BadQuaker.com website with their donations, keeping us going, and also for, you know, paying our way to events like Pork Fest and like the Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest. So thank you very much for everybody who donates. Now, I want to throw out a shout-out for our friend over there, Davi Barker, at Bitcoins Not Bombs. He's got T-shirts that he's selling, and the funds from these T-shirts are going to help other people go to events just like what we're talking about here. So if you're going to go to Pork Fest, I want to urge you to get over to, follow the link in today's show notes, get over to Bitcoins Not Bombs and get yourself one of those T-shirts from Davi. And if you'll come to Pork Fest and find my motorhome where we're camped at, and show me that you got that Bitcoins Not Bombs T-shirt, I'll buy you lunch. Either it'll be either the whatever lunch that we're having there at the motorhome, or maybe we'll walk down and get a taco or something. But if you show up at my motorhome with a Bitcoins Not Bombs T-shirt, then I'll buy you lunch. Okay. Now there's been questions that are being asked. How many listeners does the Bad Quaker Podcast have? Who's listening? What kind of, you know, where are the listeners and everything like that? It's really hard to determine with a podcast. It's kind of easy with other means, using a website. And I know that there are certain software that you can get, and it's some methods are easier than others as to finding out this stuff. We know primarily the audience for BadQuaker.com is the eastern half of the United States. We have a fairly large Canadian audience, a fairly large audience in England and Australia, you know, a lot of the English-speaking, obviously, some people in New Zealand. Oddly enough, we have a fairly large Eastern European audience and a Scandinavian audience, and we consistently have more and more people out of the Far East, China. We've had some very consistent listeners in South Korea, so you know it's pretty much all over the place. But mostly our biggest customer base, I guess you'd call it, not really customers, but a listener base. That's what it, our biggest listener base is mostly the eastern half of the U.S. and that more so than the western half of the U.S. because most of the population of the U.S. is in the eastern half. So how many of these people are there? Well, it's impossible to tell. We don't get any statistics from Stitcher, iTunes, Podcast Deutschland. We have a lot of listeners on Podcast Deutschland, and we have no way of measuring that because they have two different ways that their listeners can listen to Bad Quaker Podcast. They can download it through the link that comes back to badquaker.com, or they can or Podcast Deutschland actually downloads the podcast every day, and so people can get it right off of their site. So we have no idea what kind of – we don't have any access to their statistics. Same way with Stitcher and iTunes. Now, and we also don't know how many people are listening through LRN.fm. So it's impossible to really give an accurate number as to how many listeners that Bad Quaker podcast has. We can only measure the statistics that are from the Bad Quaker website itself. And even there are two different ways that you can get the podcast at badquaker.com. You can go through the feeds, or you can go directly to the web page, you know, where the podcast is published, and click on the podcast. You can either listen to it there or download it. So there's two different methods from the website. So now, again, how many people are listening? Well, again, we don't know. If you take a recent podcast like the one I did the other day, Fight Like You Mean It, that was a 60 megabyte file. And as of this morning, there had been about 295 gigabytes. These are people that are clicking directly on the file. This is not coming through the feed. This is actually people who went to the website, went to that page, and clicked on that file. Fight Like You Mean It being a 60 meg file, and there's almost 300 gigabytes of bandwidth used to support that that click right there. So I don't know, you can do the math on that. Now our average podcast here is about 55 megabytes, just slightly smaller than the one Fight Like You Mean It. Fight Like You Mean It had some other things that I had to add to it, sound files and things that boosted it up a little. But the average podcast is a Bad Quaker podcast, about 55 megabytes. And you have to keep in mind that any one podcast has a fairly long life over the course of its, you know, when people are still clicking on it. They continue to get hits for months or even longer. We had last year in 2012, we had 18,000 hits in 1 hour, and 14,000 of those were downloads in 1 hour. And all that came from China. And it was headed, and my first thought when I saw that is, hacker, somebody's trying to hack into the site, because that's just a crazy amount of hits and bandwidth being used all at once like that. And so I immediately investigated, and this happened at between 1 o'clock and 2 o'clock in the morning, our time, which was the middle of the day, China time. It was actually mostly concentrated in the Beijing area. So as I investigated, these were all going to one specific episode of the podcast where I had talked about Ron Paul, and I had talked quite a bit about Ron Paul and what was going to happen in the 2012 election and so forth like this. And this was a podcast that was a month old when this event took place. It had already been sitting there for a month. It had already pretty much, you know, lived its life and was being forgotten. And as we looked through this, what was the source of these clicks? Where were they coming from? And we found out that almost all of them were linked from email. They were email links. So we figured out from this information, that what probably happened was a viral email of some kind. I don't mean like a computer virus, but a viral as in, you know, it got passed around really fast to a lot of different people. Evidently, a viral email like that was passed around in Beijing and gained so much attention that it caused, you know, 18,000 people to hit the website and 14,000 of those to download that one podcast. Now, I see that as a fluke, as an anomaly, so I don't count that into any of our listenership. But here's a good time to point this out. When you hear me do the commercials for our hosting service, which is HostGator, They handled that brilliantly. I mean, our site didn't even blink. That kind of traffic came in, and HostGator handled it, and there was no problem whatsoever, because that's HostGator set up for that kind of thing. The way that we've got our business account set with them, it's not a problem, and it doesn't even cost us any more when we get a surge like that. So, anyway, so that's something to think about if you're, if you own a website or you're thinking of getting a website. Okay, so now back to the question. So how many people? Well, again, we don't know. The 18,000 one-time hits in 1 hour is not a real indication of how many people listen to the show. From our feed stats, again, I said that, you know, there's two different ways. You can get it right from the page, or you can get it from the feed. And so from the feed stats, if you look at the April statistics for the website, I was trying as much as possible in April to put out each podcast right around noon. So I was trying to be consistent. I fail sometimes, but that was my goal in April, was to try to put out every podcast at the noon hour. So if you go in on the hour by hour for the month of April, and you look at the noon time slot when I was trying to publish each day at noon, what you see is the average downloads in the noon hour for the month of April are about 800 gigabytes. And keeping in mind that the average podcast is about 55 megabytes, megabytes, not gigabytes. And so what we're looking at is, at when the noon hour came around and I hit the publish button, and it went out on the feed immediately, and according to how you've got your feed set up, some people have their feed set up so that as soon as an update takes place, they download the podcast. Other people have it set up so that when I publish a podcast, they get a notification, and then they can choose whether to download it or not. So keeping that in mind, the average download for the noon hour in the month of April was 800 gigabytes, and the average podcast size in the month of April was about 55 megabytes. So now there is some question about the accuracy of using bandwidth as a measuring device for a podcast. And my friend Michael Dean has told me that he really doesn't think it's very accurate. And he's, you know, I have a lot of respect for what Michael Dean says, especially when it comes to things like podcasting and computers and things. He really knows his stuff. So for this reason, I'm a little hesitant to publish any kind of public numbers as to how many listeners there are or whatever. I have a tendency more to just, you know, in a sense, it almost doesn't matter. I'm not here to try to score big numbers. I don't have like Google AdSense on the website to try to, you know, get money for how much traffic goes through and looks at the ads, that kind of thing. We do have, you know, sponsors that we're trying to work with, mostly people that we support their business, and we, you know, try to encourage people to use their services. And we have the thing with Amazon so that, you know, we get some money back from that. You know, it's not, we don't want to put out everything out of our own pockets. To the crew here doesn't want to do that to, you know, to keep Bad Quaker going. But anyway, I did want to get all that information out and give that little plug for how HostGator is able to handle that. That surge when it happens, like the one with China there, and is able to handle the daily surges that take place, and they do it. It happens smooth and invisibly. So if you're setting up a website, click on HostGator. The whole thing wasn't a commercial, really. I mean, it was in a sense for HostGator, but also, you know, I have had people ask who's listening, where the people, you know, where the clicks are coming from. And how many of you that there are, and there are lots of you. There are, I mean, do the math, you know, 800 gigs on the feed alone. That's just the feed, with 55 as the average, 55 megs as the average size. And, you know, there might be, that could be somewhere around 15,000 immediate downloads. And the other numbers that I quoted there, where were they? The Fight Like You Mean It podcast from earlier this week, 60 megabyte podcast, and it's already almost 300 gigabytes. So what is that off the top of my head? Something like, oh, I don't know, 3,000-4,000 downloads, something like that. So, you know, I don't know. I really don't know. Okay, so here's the interview with Stephanie Murphy. Hope you enjoy it. With me by way of Skype is Stephanie Murphy of Free Aid, spelled F-R-3-3-A-I-D. Stephanie, welcome to Bad Quaker Podcast.
Hi, Ben. Thanks so much for having me on. I'm really excited to be here.
And your podcast, also on LRN, is Pork Therapy, and that's every Friday night, Saturday morning from midnight until 1 o'clock, right?
Correct. Actually, it's not from midnight to 1. It's 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. on Friday nights live, and then there's an encore on Saturday mornings or afternoons or something like that. Well, it's relative. It depends where you are, right? It's morning somewhere.
That's true.
And you can find my website at porctherapy.com. It's pork like a porcupine.
Now, tell me about what's going on with Free Aid and with the big BitCon thing that's going on the West Coast real soon.
Yeah, okay. So I guess I should back up and start at the relative beginning. Free Aid is an organization that basically supports volunteers who provide first aid at liberty-oriented events. And, you know, right now we're primarily at liberty-oriented events because our team is relatively small. We'd like to maybe branch out a little bit more as time goes on. But for now, our biggest event has been the Porcupine Freedom Festival with, you know, up to a couple thousand people who come to New Hampshire each year and have a Freedom Festival in the middle of the woods. And that's been really wonderful, but that definitely keeps us busy. So, and we do a lot of other events throughout the year as well. So Free Aid is there basically giving out supplies. For instance, like if you go to Porkfest, you might need sunscreen, bandages, ice packs, bug spray, condoms. So things like that are what Free Aid provides. And we give those away for free because we want to provide a service to the community. And we accept, you know, donations, but it's not mandatory by any means. If you need some sunscreen, go ahead and take it, of course. And we also do, you know, have EMTs and paramedics and others who volunteer on our team who can help take care of more serious incidents. Like, for instance, last year at Porkfest, there was someone who had a severe food allergy reaction, and he started to go into, you know, anaphylactic shock. And so, you know, we called an ambulance and we called on the local services, but it was great to have EMTs and paramedics there who could help out with that as it was going on and sort of make sure that the guy was okay as it happened. So that's one thing that Free Aid does. We also do outreach to the public about health and safety. So for instance, we've been focusing on CPR outreach, teaching people how to do CPR and how to use a defibrillator in case somebody goes into cardiac arrest while they're around. And that ties in with liberty or volunteerism because, you know, when someone goes into cardiac arrest, every minute that goes by, they are less likely to survive if their heart doesn't get started back up. So if they call an ambulance, oftentimes those services are kind of provided by the state. If you're in a city like, for instance, Boston, it can take, you know, 10 minutes or longer for an ambulance to get there. And by that time, you know, the chance of the person surviving without a heartbeat for 10 minutes are pretty low. So it would be great if somebody, and of course, if you're in a rural area, it takes even longer. It can take, you know, 30, 45 minutes for an ambulance to reach you. So it really helps to have people around who are caring neighbors who can help out in a situation like that when someone goes into cardiac arrest. So at Free Aid, we try to educate people about that and how they can help if somebody needs their help at some point. Of course, it doesn't have to be a liberty activist or anything. They can help anybody, of course. And so that's another thing that Free Aid does. And we're also a networking place for liberty-loving healthcare professionals. So that's basically Free Aid's mission. And Free Aid started in 2010 at Porkfest. And it was founded by Teresa Warmke, who still works with me at Free Aid, and Garland West, who also was with Free Aid for a while, but she had to kind of step away from it. So it's just me and Teresa now. But they came up with the idea at Porkfest and said, you know, it would be great if there was like a first aid tent here that people could come to because people need first aid in the middle of the woods and it's not always easy to get when you're Porkfest. So Free Aid was kind of born and we launched, put up a website and started doing our thing. But quickly we realized, you know, we're operating as a charity, and you know, it really helps if that could be recognized, and we wanted our organization to grow. And so we kind of made the difficult decision, as an organization that is made up of voluntarists, but also wanted our organization to grow, wanted people to contribute and be able to like deduct it from their taxes if they pay taxes, and also to get some of the, I guess, help that comes with having a 501c3 status, because like certain payment processors like PayPal or others will waive their fees if you are a 501c3 organization, and you can do a lot of other things too. So we decided to pursue that status, and that was a wild ride. Teresa, who is also our treasurer, prepared this application and sent it. We sent it into the IRS. We had to organize and make bylaws and fill out all kinds of forms. They took, long story short, they took about a year to get back to us. And then they said, well, you're not the right kind of organization. You need to be a C corporation. And FreeAid was an LLC. So basically they said, you know, you're going to have to restructure. And we found out, you know, we would have had to hire lawyers and do all kinds of paperwork. And it would have been a lot of cost and a lot of distraction, frankly, from our mission, which is to help people out with first aid. So we decided we didn't want to keep pursuing that. And at the same time, everybody at FreeAid was getting really excited about Bitcoins. We were hearing about that. And we thought, well, that would be really great if we could go in a Bitcoin direction with this organization and try to do most of our business in Bitcoin. It would help us avoid a lot of these pitfalls that we've been experiencing, because I don't know if you're familiar with this, Ben, but PayPal is not exactly the most easy organization to deal with. They have a lot of history of just locking down people's accounts for seemingly no reason, kind of demanding paperwork and stuff like that. And they've done this to FreeAid a number of times. And every time it's really hard to get a hold of like an actual person at that organization. So yeah, like we've had some problems with PayPal, and Bitcoin really gets around all of those. So we were really excited about Bitcoin. And I think the Liberty community in general is also excited about Bitcoin. At least a lot of people are. I don't want to collectivize there, but a lot of people are. And so we decided, wouldn't it be cool if FreeAid could be a Bitcoin-based charity? And that's also cool for another reason, because there was a survey, I don't know if you saw that, but there was a survey recently where they somebody asked a bunch of Bitcoin users, and this was kind of unscientific. It was just kind of a poll on the internet, so who knows if it's accurate, but maybe at least a little bit reflective. They asked them, you know, what do you use Bitcoins for, a lot of other demographic kind of questions. And people said the most common use of Bitcoins that they had engaged in was donating them, you know, using them as donations. And I thought that was really interesting, because it was like, you know, 55% of people had used Bitcoins for donations. Less than 10% had used them to buy drugs online on the Silk Road. But that's what you hear about on the media, you know, that people are just doing all these illegal practices and money laundering. And, you know, of course, buying drugs is a victimless crime. But, you know, that's what the reputation is that Bitcoins have, that they're strictly for nefarious purposes. But actually, it's way more common to have them use as donations. Go ahead.
Isn't that strange that it seems like everything that our enemies throw at us, they always use the same levels of lies and excuses and slanders, trying to say that we're, you know, just a bunch of druggies, we're not, you know, almost every level of what they throw at us is based on series of lies like that. Like with Bitcoins, mm-hmm. Of all the things you can do with Bitcoins, one of those, yes, is you can go to Silk Road and do bad things, or what we're told are bad things. But the whole, I mean, you can buy silver with them, you can buy gold with them, you can give them to friends, you can give them to charities, you know, mm-hmm. and every day more and more businesses are using them. It's just weird that they always throw the same thing. It's for the children. We have to oppress these people because they're using the drugs, and that's going to kill the children. You know, it's crazy.
Yeah.
Anyway,
absolutely.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, that's a great point. And it's totally true. I completely agree with you. So we just figured as Free Aid, as a charity, not only could we really help our organization focus a lot more on our mission, which is helping people, and not have to worry about dealing with PayPal and Dwolla and all these other payment companies that deal in the legacy banking system, but we could, you know, we could instead use Bitcoins, and they would be great for our organization, but they would also be, you know, it would also be, I think, a great boon to the Bitcoin community to have more charities out there that are operating using Bitcoins, because it really shows off the many facets of Bitcoins and what they can do and how powerful they are and how they have the power not just to enrich people or to allow them to buy things and perhaps be buying things anonymously and yada, yada, all the common things you hear about, but also how much power they have to really help people. So we thought that was just a great fit, and we decided we were going to abandon the application for nonprofit status that we had filed with the IRS. We were going to stop asking them for permission, you know, to recognize us as a charity, even though we are, and we had been operating that way all along as a nonprofit organization. We just decided we weren't going to ask for their permission, you know, to recognize us as such. And we were going to do as much of our business as possible in Bitcoin. And I was really excited about that decision. And so was Teresa, who's, you know, now my partner at Free Aid. And we decided as part of that, we were going to announce it on April 15th of this year, which was tax day. So it was kind of a, kind of a little, you know, a little way to get some attention on what we were doing. And it really did get a lot of attention and, some of it not so happy, but you know, when you take a stance on something publicly, you're going to get haters and you're also going to get lovers and admirers. And that's exactly what happened. So to put out the word about what Free Aid was doing with going in this Bitcoin direction, we partnered up with an organization that's new, and it's called Coin Not Bombs. And this is kind of a play on food, not bombs, you know, because, this is an organization that's basically a launch pad for Bitcoin-based charities, and also, you know, introducing existing charities to how they can use Bitcoin to their advantage and how it can really help them, and it has the power to help them way beyond what the legacy banking system can do. And also, you know, what these organizations can do for the Bitcoin community and Bitcoin's reputation at large. So Bitcoin Not Bombs is really focused on kind of marrying those two. And they really helped us out. That's Drew Phillips and Davi Barker, who are behind Bitcoin Not Bombs. And they really helped us out in promoting this press release that we put out about going in this Bitcoin-only direction. Or not Bitcoin-only. I think, you know, Free Aid is still going to take donations within the legacy banking system like we had been before. But, you know, our focus is really going to be more on Bitcoin, and we're going to, not that we hold a lot of assets, because we're a charity and transparency is very important to us. And so we want to show that we're putting those donations to use. So we're not exactly holding a lot of assets at Free Aid. And we want to show people that we're, you know, like buying supplies and getting ready to go to events so that we can help people out. But, you know, the assets that we do hold, we're going to do it in Bitcoin. And that really works out a lot better for us than holding dollars. So where were we at with Bitcoin Not Bombs? Yeah, so they helped us put out this press release. And Davi got the attention of a reporter at the Huffington Post, Eliezer Melendez. And he had written an article a little while before that called Bitcoin's Future Might Be in Porn or something like that. It was definitely probably aimed to get people's attention, you know, who maybe sensationalized a little bit. But he was interested in writing about what Free Aid was doing. So Teresa talked to him about it, and she's our treasurer, and I think she did a fantastic job, you know, talking to him about what was going on with Free Aid. And he wrote up an article, and the article was titled Bitcoin Celebrated as a Way to Avoid Taxes. So he really played up this angle of, hey, this organization, they're trying not to pay their fair share. And it was so funny to see the reactions. There are like 900 comments on that Huffington Post article. And so many of them are from basically, you know, like liberal statists who say, hey, these people aren't paying their taxes. They want all this stuff for free. This charity that does things for people for free. They want all this stuff for free and they're not paying their fair share. There was a lot of the term horizontal enforcement comes to mind when I look at the comments on that article, because what I saw was a lot of, I wasn't named in the article. And actually I feel kind of grateful for that because, you know, Teresa got a lot of heat in these comments. They were saying, oh, she's going to get a visit for the IRS. She's bad, bad slave, you know, essentially. that's basically what they were like, except there were a few people who were kind of commenting and saying, really, liberals, you know, you want people to get free medical care and this is what this organization is doing. And now you're kind of trashing on them for wanting to use Bitcoin. so it was an interesting, exercise in, I guess, seeing what the public at large thinks of that idea of the idea of Bitcoin being used as a way to avoid taxes. I would say that wasn't even like really the main thrust of what free aid was doing. You know, it's not simply a way to quote avoid taxes. We haven't done anything illegal. You know, the IRS hasn't said anything about Bitcoins, at least not yet. And so I don't really know what exactly the problem is, except that it was kind of sensationalized and it made people mad because they don't like to see other people potentially getting away with, quote unquote, not paying taxes. It really seemed to kind of push people's buttons.
That always kind of reminds me of, you know, when you're a kid in school and somebody has gum and some other kid rats that person out to the teacher, Johnny's got gum. And then the teacher kicks into socialist mode. If you don't have gum for everybody in the class, then you can't have it. And it's, you know, it's like this is just dripping with socialism in so many different ways. And that horizontal enforcement like you're talking about there is the same thing. It's like, you know, well, if I can't have gum, you shouldn't be able to work and buy gum on your own and have it. You know, it's, I don't know. I don't understand these people.
Yeah, that's a great analogy to the gum in the classroom thing. And because a classroom, you know, that kind of setup is an authoritarian system. Like the kids are not choosing to be there. They don't really have much of a choice. And they're in this system and they've got these rules kind of imposed on them. And it's just like, you know, the tax system is now. You know, people are in the system. They're born into it. They didn't have a choice. They've got these rules imposed on them that they may not necessarily like, but they can't really fully explore that or admit that perhaps because it's painful to realize that you're being subjected to a system that you don't like. And so you kind of say, well, if I have to do this, then everybody else should have to do it too. And, you know, I guess we can kind of understand it that way, even if we disagree with what they're saying very wholeheartedly.
I'm sorry. Yeah, go ahead. I was going to say, we have a slight lag in Skype that's causing us to talk on each other. So I'm saying that for the listener's sake. So if we had a better speed between us, that we wouldn't be walking on each other like that. But go ahead and finish your point.
Oh, I was just going to say, you know, there is a silver lining in this. We did get a lot of Bitcoin contributions from that article. I think it was on the Bitcoin forums and a lot of people saw it and, you know, sent us basically their change that they had in their Bitcoin wallets. You know, like we got a lot of small donations and I thought that was really interesting and cool. You know, like it's basically akin to throwing your change in the free aid jar at Porkfest or something like that. They're just doing it virtually. And I really appreciated that.
That is really neat. And, you know, coming from somebody who, you know, gets donations, I think a lot of times people say, well, you know, I can't really afford to do anything and I don't want to insult them by sending them $5 or the you know, Bitcoin equivalent. But on the receiving end of that, we get a tiny little donation like that. And it's thrilling. It's like, you know, people care. They're doing this because they care. And even if they can't support you with $10 million, they can toss some extra change your way. And that really means something, you know?
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, I do accept donations on Pork Therapy too, my podcast. And I do feel genuinely happy when I get any size of donation because it's just, you know, it's a nice gesture. And those also add up over time. And with Bitcoin, it's really great because, you know, for instance, PayPal They take, 30 cents plus 3% of the transaction. And so if it's a small donation, that 30 cents kind of eats into it quite a bit. But with Bitcoin, you know, it's potentially you don't even have to include a transaction fee. And so people can send these really small amounts of change. And, you know, who knows, at some point there was a joke that was going on in our Facebook group where we organize a lot of the free aid stuff we coordinate about these small donations. And somebody said, you know, hang on to that for a couple of years and it'll pay for the entire team's trip to Porkfest, you know, 2016.
You never know.
Yeah.
You know, I started to say this a second ago. I've kind of set my audience up for this particular interview in this podcast by teasing all week, talking about setting up businesses that are sort of under the radar, businesses without permission, businesses that don't necessarily use the standard banking system and so forth. And so I've kind of set them up without actually telling them what was going to happen today in this interview. But now I've got Stephanie Murphy with me on the line. Stephanie, you've done this both directions. You have tried to set your free aid up legitimately with regular banking and using all the like you said, the legacy, the old-timey banking system, you know, the crotchety old men sitting behind giant desks rather than the modern world. Was that a cat?
No, it was a crotchety old man.
Oh, okay.
That was my impression.
but you tried it both ways. And people often ask, well, you know, isn't it really difficult to set up a business that's working essentially underground, but not so much underground as just not within the system, not with the permission slips and, you know, and framed letters on the wall that say, yes, you're going to be inspected once a month or whatever. How do you compare the two in difficulty of setting up a business that's just the business and no permissions, as opposed to jumping through all the hoops to get permission?
Yeah, that's a great question. I would say that, first of all, the term that you used, outside the system, is more applicable to something like free aid than, for instance, like underground, because we do really value transparency. Like, that is something that's very important to us as a charity organization, that people can see, you know, what we have for our organization as far as assets go and donations. And we're very open about that. And, you know, you can look at the blockchain and see how much we have in our free aid Bitcoin address. We actually got a vanity address that contains the word free aid, which is really cool, in the Bitcoin address. So you can look at that and see how much Bitcoin we have. And, anybody's free to do so. So we're trying really hard to be transparent as much as possible with Bitcoin. And, you know, we publicly attach this is free aid's address to it. Of course, that's not something you have to do with Bitcoin, but you can if you want to. So I guess it's more meant to be outside the system than to be a secret or to be underground, I guess. But we're also keeping our bank accounts because we have them. You know, like, we went to the trouble to set them up. Actually, not we. Teresa went to all the trouble to set those up. So we're keeping all that stuff in place. But if we lost it for some reason, if they wanted to take that away from us, then we could still go on doing our operations as we have before, because we have Bitcoins and we have some physical stuff like our supplies and our tent and our defibrillator and all that stuff. And we have the brand of free aid. We have the website. So to answer your original question, Ben, I think it's way easier to set up a Bitcoin-based business than it is to set up a fully inside the system business, try to make sure you're complying with all these rules and you got all the I's dotted and T's crossed. It took quite a while to set up free aid's bank accounts and to incorporate and to do bylaws and all this stuff. But with Bitcoin, if you want to start accepting Bitcoin, it takes 30 minutes, you know, I guess, aside from the time that maybe you'd take to educate yourself about it, but it's very, very easy. So it really lowers the barriers to entry in terms of starting a charity or any other kind of organization to use Bitcoin.
One other thing people often bring up in this topic is that the risk of having the IRS raid and grab property or grab bank accounts, and that does exist with a business of any kind that's outside of the system. But I think a lot of people don't realize how badly that risk is. Even if you jump through all the hoops and do everything you're told to do, there are still layers and layers and layers of bureaucrats that are seeking a justification for their job. And if they can get you on their radar for any reason whatsoever, they'll find some regulation that you've broke. And you still have to go through, you know, the same fear and the same agitation of having an audit or having an inspection or whatever. So in a sense, you're not any safer by going through all the processes to cooperate with them. They'll turn on you just as quick as they will on somebody that they're not aware of, except they don't know about the one they're not aware of.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess there is probably sort of a tension between, like, you know, wanting to promote your business or promote your organization and also maintain some level of staying off the radar. I mean, Free Aid, honestly, is a pretty small organization. We're not like going around the, you know, we don't have a chapter in every city where we're going around to every single festival and like supporting these volunteers who are doing first aid. I would like that. I think that's great. And that was one of the reasons that we wanted to try to go in the system so that we could get really big potentially at some point and really grow the organization. But it was hard, and it's hard with two people, you know, trying to run a whole organization that does a lot of stuff and, you know, do the website and do the finances and do the physical stuff and get supplies and coordinate volunteers. And it's just a lot of work. And, you know, we have other things that we do if Free Aid is not our full-time gig. So it makes it a little bit difficult. But Bitcoin makes that easier because it just simplifies everything.
Now, you are personally planning on attending BitCon. Is that right?
Yes. Thank you for bringing that up.
So you'll be there.
I sure will. I'm really excited about it. And I'm going to be doing a number of things at BitCon, but the one I want to highlight now, I guess, is that so Free Aid is going to be at BitCon. We'll have, I don't know how many injuries they're going to be there. It's going to be in a convention center, so probably not too many, which is great. Like, we love to see events where nobody needs so much as a Band-Aid, you know.
Headaches and hangovers.
Yeah, you know, we do get a fair amount of those at the conventions, and so... you know, we have water and, you know, over the counter, like ibuprofen and stuff like that in case anybody needs it. But, so we're going to be there, and we're going to be there with Bitcoin Not Bombs. And there's going to be sort of a coalition, I guess, of, nonprofit organizations that are using Bitcoins for their organizations to accomplish their goals. And it's going to be Free Aid and antiwar.com. And also the Free State Project. So we're going to have a joint table with the three of us there, and we're going to try to spread the word about how Bitcoin is great for charities and nonprofits, and how nonprofits are great for Bitcoin, and, you know, just meet as much people, many people as we can. Where there's also going to be a panel at the BitCon, and I'll be the moderator for that panel. And then Teresa from Free Aid is going to be on the panel, as well as Angela Keaton from antiwar.com and Carla Garrick from the Free State Project. And we're going to talk about this, you know, discussion on the panel. And it's going to be, you know, video recorded, so the internet will be able to see it. And it's all about how Bitcoins and nonprofits relate to one another. So I'm like super excited about that. And the guys from Bitcoin Not Bombs are also going to be there. And as a fundraiser for Free Aid, antiwar.com, and the Free State Project, it's split three ways between those organizations. They have Bitcoin t-shirts available on their website, which is bitcoinnotbombs.com. And there's a little store tab that you can click on if you want to get that. And, you know, not only can you get a really cool t-shirt that shows your support for Bitcoin, they have a couple different designs and colors, but you can also help those three organizations, if those are something you support, get to the Bitcoin conference and raise funds for their operations. So I think that's really cool. And not only that, but there's kind of a shortage of like cool Bitcoin t-shirts out there. I remember looking for one a while back, and I was thinking like, yeah, you know, I'd really like a Bitcoin t-shirt because I'm excited about this and I want to show it off to other people. But there was really nothing out there. And I think the guys at Bitcoin Not Bombs have really come in at a very opportune time when a lot of people are looking for shirts like that, and they have made them available on their website.
Yeah, Davee Barker is just a genius when it comes to graphic arts design, that kind of thing. And watching him just, you know, he gets an idea in his head, and then bam, there it is. And you look at that and you think, man, that's great. You know, the bomber, the B-17 bomber with the bitcoins coming out of it, that is so cool.
Yeah.
And to watch him develop that, it was really neat to watch it happen, because talking to him in Facebook when this was taking place, it was almost like you could see the things clicking in his mind. Yeah, bomber. Well, you know, it was pretty cool.
I mean, if you're listening to this, I would recommend, like, even if you're not necessarily interested in a shirt, just go check out the designs, because they are really cool. There's this bomber that's, you know, dropping bitcoins out of it, flying overhead, and it says Bitcoin, not bombs. And then there's like a word cloud of words and phrases that are related to Bitcoin in the shape of the Bitcoin B, like the symbol for Bitcoin currency. And they have that in like two different colors. There's black ones and orange ones. So like both of these designs are just really well done, artistic, beautiful designs. And I recommend that you check them out. Just go to the bitcoinnotbombs.com and see for yourself.
Now you're part of the Free State Project, right?
Yeah. I moved to New Hampshire in 2006 and I was interested in the Free State Project. And now I guess, I've gone like completely apolitical, you know, personally, and I'm not interested in doing politics or in the system at all. But I do really like the community aspect of the Free State Project, and I enjoy living here in New Hampshire a lot. I've had a lot of opportunities and a lot of, you know, gotten into media, obviously, and had the chance to network with a lot of people and have businesses and have projects together, and it's been a lot of fun.
When people tune in to listen to Pork Therapy, what should they expect from you?
Pork Therapy is a show about personal freedom, and it's pretty like eclectic. It's a 3-hour show. The first hour of the show is usually like kind of current events, but it's not like hard news. It's more like, how can this news relate to your life and get you more freedom? I try to cover it from that angle. In the second hour of the show, we usually do listener questions and emails, so it gets a little more personal. And you can call into the show too, so if you want to be on the air, there's an opportunity for that. And then the third hour is called Sex and Science Hour. And it's basically a shameless ploy to get people to listen through to the third hour. And we usually just cover like science and tech stories, stories about sex. It's kind of a wild card. So, and it's available on podcast too. You know, if you go to porktherapy.com, you can add the podcast feed and check that out. And if you're interested in bitcoins, I've also been involved in another project recently. It's called the Let's Talk Bitcoin podcast, and you can find it at letstalkbitcoin.com. It's a twice weekly show all about what's going on in the Bitcoin world, and it's really seems to be taking off recently. I think people are just really...
That was Let's Talk Bitcoin?
Yes, that was letstalkbitcoin.com, and it's a weekly show about what's going on in the Bitcoin world, and you can, you know, subscribe to them there on SoundCloud. That seems to be really taking off. I think a lot of people are interested in hearing a show about Bitcoins. So if that sounds like you, then check out letstalkbitcoin.com.
So we've got Pork Fest Therapy, and we've got letstalkbitcoin.com.
And Pork Therapy.
Oops, what did I say? Oh, I said Pork Fest, didn't I? Well, you'll be at Pork Fest.
Yeah.
Okay, so you'll be at Porkfest. You're going to be at BitCon. The shows are Let's Talk Bitcoin and Pork Therapy. And we have Free Aid, FR33Aid, and that's the actual website name, too. So you can just type in FR33AID.com, and it'll take you right over there. Or you can follow the links in today's shows, in today's show notes, either way. Stephanie, is there anything else you want to cover?
Anything in the world? Ooh, I have another opportunity. Oh my gosh, I'm on the spot.
Foot care.
What are your plans for Porkfest? I'm curious about that.
We're showing up like a week or two, something like that, ahead of time, and we're going to be there like a week after. So it's
right on.
Yeah, it's a vacation, and you know, I say all the time that for me, my opinion, Pork Fest is the Liberty event of the year, and it is for so many reasons. You know, it's such a nice place. Rogers Campground is just such a wonderful place wonderful view, you know, and then the people come in and you see this eclectic this eclectic group of people, everything from, you know, old people like me and even older, if that's possible. And
you are not old.
All the way down to, you know, to kids running around having fun, 20-year-olds, 18-year-olds running around like they're 12. And it's great. It's just, you know, the level, the feeling that you get there being around all those people is fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely. And it sounds like you're going to be enjoying a little bit of alone time, too, since you're going to be there a week on either end. Are you planning to stay at the campground for those times, or are you going to tour around New Hampshire?
A little of both. We'll be in the campground with our motorhome, and then we have a little car that we tow behind it. So we'll be within driving distance of all the different fun things in New Hampshire. And there's a lot of fun things in New Hampshire, especially in the summer.
Yeah, absolutely. I will always be eternally grateful to you for last year at Porkfest when you loaned your fan to the media room, because it was super hot. It got to be like, you know, 95 degrees during the day. Everybody was just dying, especially in this media room where we're kind of closed in there doing radio shows. And you brought in your fan and it was like, hallelujah, here comes Ben with this fan. It was really nice. I hope that made its way back to you at some
point. I forgot to go back and pick it up, but that's okay. Somebody will get use out of it.
Oh, sorry to hear that, but I really appreciated you doing that. It really made a big difference.
Well, thank you. I appreciate you guys. You know, the person you mentioned that had the allergic reaction was a friend of ours in the next camp over from us. And we were very concerned about him because he's just a super nice guy, just a wonderful guy. Came all the way there from Scotland just for Porkfest. And then he ended up with a food allergy that could have killed him. You know, it was serious.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we're hoping to prevent some of that this year. Like we put out something to the Porkfest vendors saying, you know, like, it would be great if you could list the ingredients and label things really clearly just in case anybody has severe food allergies. And I think we're going to try to, you know, sort of put the word out just to everybody to say, hey, you know, you never know what's in this stuff. These are vendors, and not like they're going to poison you or anything, or their food is unsafe, but just be aware that ingredients can get mixed up when you're outside cooking in the summer, and they're not necessarily going to keep things separate. So like if you have peanut oil allergies or, you know, who knows what, just be aware of it. And it always helps if somebody has severe allergies, you know, to bring an EpiPen around with them just in case, even to like bee stings, because there could be bees at Porkfest. There could be ticks. Like we try to keep everybody with bug spray if that's something that they want to use. And we also have tick removers and stuff at Porkfest. So we really try to stay on top of those things that can happen to people while they're out in the woods. but it always helps to be a little bit prepared yourself.
You said Free Aid does CPR classes. Do they also do the choking, teaching people how to deal with choking?
Oh, Heimlich maneuver. No, we haven't done that yet. That might be something that we could look at doing too, because that happens sometimes, of course. At Porkfest, I believe there are going to be some CPR classes, and actually even at Libertopia, which is another event that we plan on being at later on in the summer, there will definitely be some CPR classes there. So those are something to watch out for. You know, we've thought about another thing we've thought about at Free Aid, and maybe I could get your take on this, Ben, is doing some kind of maybe like a smoking outreach, or like helping people who want to quit smoking have the resources to quit. And we thought about that because we noticed, you know, like there's a lot of libertarians who smoke cigarettes, and some of them express interest in quitting, but of course it's hard. You know, a lot of people who try to quit cigarettes try multiple times and they end up going back to it, and they'd like to get off, but they're having a hard time. But we also don't want to be like preachy, you know. If somebody doesn't want to quit smoking, then, you know, we're not going to try to apply some coercion to try to get them to do that or anything. So I don't know. What do you think of that idea?
I think it's a great idea. I don't smoke and have never been addicted to tobacco, but I think it's a great idea. This is a good time for me to give a free commercial to a friend of mine. I have a friend named Jake Shannon, and he has a radio show in Salt Lake City called
The name sounds familiar.
His show's Mental Self-Defense Radio. And he's also a professional hypnotist. And he does Skype sessions, where over Skype, he will hypnotize you and help you quit smoking. It's really, everything I've heard, he has really good results. And
do you hypnotize somebody over Skype?
He's magic.
I'm having a hard time picturing how that would happen. I mean,
I assume he uses the video portion of Skype and then his magic. And he does weight loss. He does several other things like that and is very successful with it. He has a really good track record. Jake Shannon, Mental Self-Defense Radio, and I'm giving him that little free shout-out. But I think it's a great idea for you guys, too. Anything that you can do like that, it makes people's lives better, and that's what Free Aid does, make people's lives better.
Yeah, thanks for that. You know, there's been a lot of talk about these, e-cigarettes recently, and the government has kind of gradually been ratcheting up their wanting to clamp down on e-cigarettes and saying, no, they must be banned. They're addictive for children and it's all about the children and they're bad, bad, bad. but I have a slightly different perspective on it. In fact, a very different perspective. I have seen a lot of people transition from traditional cigarettes to e-cigarettes. And I think that it's fairly straightforward and obvious that inhaling this vapor is not going to be as damaging to your body as inhaling combusted material. And so to me, it seems like a no-brainer to promote e-cigarettes. And they can also be tapered down, like you can control the amount of nicotine that's in them. And so you can gradually taper it down and it won't be so hard to quit, or it won't feel so painful to your body as you go through those withdrawals. So I just think they're potentially a wonderful tool for helping people transition away from smoking altogether. But the government and all these kind of in the system public health people really don't like e-cigarettes. And they in fact want to ban them. And actually, I think they have been banned in Boston. Like, they are treated as regular cigarettes. So they have a smoking ban in public places like bars and restaurants. And you also cannot smoke e-cigarettes there, even though that's doesn't make any sense because they don't create any smoke and you can barely tell that somebody is puffing on one, even if you're sitting next to them. So I just think things like that, this sort of zero tolerance mentality is probably overall really hurting people, you know?
Yeah. That just makes sense. You're breathing in a vapor with some chemicals in it. Okay, so that's probably not a perfect situation, but it's got to be better than breathing in, what you just burned. I mean, it's like sticking your face in a campfire and breathing in that, that's not right. Comfortable. So it's got to be better for you one way or the other, even if you never stops, the use of nicotine. It's got to be healthier. That's just basic thought.
Yeah, absolutely. I think they may be concerned, or they're, at least this is what they're saying. They're concerned that, people who are not already nicotine users are going to pick up e-cigarettes and think, oh, they're harmless, and get addicted to the nicotine. And that is not harmless. Nicotine does have some health effects itself, but when it's not combined, with these chemicals, carcinogens, and combusted materials, that's just harm reduction. I mean, that's fairly obvious to me.
Plus, real science tends to show that a certain segment of the population tends to use one product or another like that, and a certain segment doesn't. And that's fairly consistent whether you prohibit it or not. Sometimes there are temporary surges in those numbers based on when you lift the prohibition or when you put on a prohibition. But typically, once everything levels out, about the same proportion of people, whether we're talking about alcohol or different kinds of drugs, other than, because alcohol is really just a drug too, but the same proportion of human beings likes to do things like that, and the same proportion doesn't like to do things like that, and the law typically doesn't affect it in the long run. I even saw one thing that said that monkeys, given the opportunity to consume alcohol at will have about the same rates of alcohol use as humans do. So, you know, it's a primate thing.
Yeah, I'm wondering, have you ever heard of this experiment called Rat Park?
No.
Well, I found out about that maybe about a year ago, and it was really interesting to me. And basically, what it was that, you know, there's this theory, this conventional theory of addiction, where certain substances are just addictive, and certain people are going to get hooked on them, and then there's nothing they can do. And it's for no reason other than that they're, you know, chemically affecting the person's brain, and some people are genetically susceptible to that, and they're just going to be addicts. And so the way to deal with this is to ban those substances and make sure people can't get their hands on them. Well, there was and all those experiments that kind of showed this were done on rats who had, you know, things like electrodes planted in their brains, and they were in small cages, and they were given a lever, you know, that dispensed crack or something like that, and they would keep pressing the lever and getting more crack until they died, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
But those were really stressed and traumatized animals. And if there was a guy, I think in the 1970s, I want to say, who did a series of experiments where he took rats and they didn't have any surgery. They were kept in a giant cage that was like, you know, 20 times larger, you know, plenty of living space, a few other rats in the cage, but they weren't crowded. They had tons of room to play. They had toys in there that they could use for enrichment. They had different kinds of food. And basically, these were happy rats, and they called it Rat Park because it was like a playground for the rats. So it turns out when you take happy rats and you put them in this playground cage instead of these tiny cages that are usually used for research and the animals aren't stressed and traumatized, they don't choose addictive substances. So if they're given a choice between like just plain water or water with like heroin in it or water with sugar in it or other kinds of substances, they don't choose the drugs. They go for the water. And so this suggested that perhaps there's an element of, you know, people seek out addictions because they are medicating themselves and they are in fact stressed and traumatized. And that could be the root of those addictions instead of just simply, oh, these are chemicals and they're addictive.
That completely makes sense. Well,
yeah,
I found
it really interesting.
I have to wrap it up today. I really appreciate you coming on the show with me.
Yeah. Thanks so much, Bennett. This was really fun to talk with you, and I look forward to seeing you at Porkfest.
Yeah, and it won't be very long. What, like a month? So.
Oh, gosh, it's creeping up. Yeah, it's a little over a month, maybe like 5 weeks now.
Yeah. So thanks a lot for coming on the show, and folks, thanks for listening to today's podcast. Remember to visit badquaker.com, where liberty is our mission. Thanks a lot, folks.